science is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
That was a bit of a breath. Full? Yeah. How are we?
Very good, thank you.
Good.
How are you?
Good. Kai Kone, I'm Marcus Jones, tēnā koe Marcus, and also Lisa with us.
Hey.
So what is in science news today, Marcus?
Okay, so a few topics, but first I want to talk about Nobel Prizes and pulsars. Pulsars, do anyone know what a pulsar
is? Less familiar with that one.
Well, that's a type
Yeah, it's not an award. It's a...
No, well, the Nobel Prize is, but obviously pulsars are a type of star.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought... Okay, so I thought there was the signal wave, radio wave thing. But it's
right, so...
Literal star? Are you saying a literal star? Pulsar
it's
is a star.
It's a type of star.
Okay.
Yeah. This word for star is fetu, just putting that out
fetu,
there.
Fetu, okay. What's the word for pulsar?
I don't know.
Okay, so what I want to talk about is a little bit how they were discovered and why that is relevant. Hopefully, we'll get to by the end. But a woman called Dame Jocelyn Bell Burnell. She's now a dame, so she's been well recognized. She was in Cambridge in the 1960s, working as a radio astronomer, an astrophysicist. And she was building radio telescopes and taking lots of data. And when she was poring over all her data, she noticed a sort of a small repeating signal in her radio signals. And it was very small. It was only like one part in about 100,000. So it's just a tiny, tiny little signal. And she only noticed it because she was born in Northern Ireland, and she was, while she was at Cambridge, she has said more recently that she was suffering from something called imposter syndrome, which is basically...
Heard about that one.
You've heard it?
Yeah.
Okay.
They talk about it a lot at university.
Right, exactly. So people who, you know, they get somewhere and they don't really think they belong, or they think...
They don't deserve it.
They don't deserve it, or someday someone's going to realize that they're actually not that smart and they're going to get kicked out, or whatever. So she worked very, very hard, and her sort of a rationale was, if I work as hard as I can, do as much as I can, then when they finally realize I'm not worthy, then I don't have any regrets. You know, I try my best. But anyway, she worked very hard, and she found this signal. And her PhD advisor said, okay, well, it's probably just man-made. So it could be a pirate radio station, or it could be passing cars, or it could be sort of some radio signal from something else, not from space. Mm. She thought otherwise. And so she worked hard again, and it took months and months and months, and she finally found some more signals. And what was critical is that the signals were moving with the stars. So if her telescope moved as the stars moved in the sky, the signal moved with the stars. So it was clearly coming from outside our planet. And it turned out, so at the time they didn't really know what it was. This was in the 1960s, and afterwards they realized that these were coming from a type of star called neutron star. So this was the first sort of recorded measurement of radio signals coming from a neutron star. Now, what is a neutron star? Well, it is a very, very, very dense star. It's a star that's basically collapsed.
Okay.
They are very small. They are highly magnetized. They're made of neutrons only. So these are fundamental particles. And they spin extremely fast. And as they're spinning, because they've got a very strong magnetic field, they're spinning, they're like a little lighthouse, they emanate radio waves. This is a beam of radio waves.
Okay.
Yeah? And if the beam is directed towards Earth, if we're in the path, like with a lighthouse, if you're in the light beam, then you see a blip on your radio telescope.
So that's the same thing. She saw that signal when it was coming towards...
She saw the signal. And as these stars were spinning, and they can spin on the orders of seconds or less, milliseconds even, very, very fast, she was seeing this blip in her radio signal. So these stars are 20 kilometers in diameter, very, very small, but they are maybe 1.5 times the mass of the sun.
Okay.
Squeezed into 20 kilometers.
It's pretty impressive.
Which is pretty impressive. So if a neutron star was on Earth, one teaspoonful would weigh 1 billion tons.
Whoa.
Okay. That's pretty impressive.
Heavy. Yeah. Anyway, so this is in the news at the moment a little bit because there was a Nobel Prize awarded for this discovery. But she didn't get it. She did all the work, most of the work, but her PhD advisor got the Nobel Prize. She didn't.
Oh.
Even though he didn't even believe
it. Is that because
even though,
well, at the start, he didn't. Do we know it's a he? Oh, it's a he.
It is a he. So his name is Anthony Hewish.
Is that because his name went first on the publication or something?
I don't know. Mm. I don't know.
Because there's some stuff around that too. Right?
But now this was a little bit of controversy, but she has never expressed any bitterness about this. In fact, she said she's sort of glad she didn't get the prize because it enabled her to do other things.
I know. I love that quote. She's saying basically that if she had gotten the Nobel Prize, then she would have never been awarded any other prizes. But because she didn't get the Nobel Prize, then she
was able to get something
else.
Did she get?
Well, she's actually won quite a lot, but just recently she was awarded $3 million. I guess US dollars, for her work on pulsars and also for a lifetime of work inspiring people in science.
Wow.
And this was funded, this is called a Breakthrough Prize. It's funded by Silicon Valley entrepreneurs, sort of companies and big tech companies in Silicon Valley. And the really cool thing is that she is going to donate all of it to the Institute of Physics to fund PhD students from underrepresented groups in physics.
Wow.
So just as she was an underrepresented group because she was female, studying for a PhD in a massively male-dominated field, especially in the 1960s, she wants to turn that around, make it come full circle, and she's going to push more underrepresented people to do things that...
Okay, that's awesome.
Like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is very cool.
So that was, I thought that was a nice story.
Pulsars versus Nobel Prizes.
Exactly.
Mm. Mm-hmm. All right. Me haere tonu ki te kaupapa tuarua. So we're talking hurricanes and cyclones.
Yeah, so this is a little bit closer to home for me, especially because you may have heard in the news there's a big storm brewing in the Atlantic and it's headed towards the Carolinas. And I, just a few months ago, lived in the Carolinas. And we've been through this procedure, a couple of times, but there is a Category 4, I think, now, hurricane, a few hundred kilometers off the coast of North Carolina, and it's heading west, and it's sort of oscillating between a Category 3, 4, maybe even up to a 5. And just to give you an idea, that means, so a Category 4 hurricane, the winds are about, or between 210 and about 250 kilometers an hour. So that's enough to blow you over, definitely.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this thing is sort of churning away, and they're expected, because it's going through over very, very warm water,
mm-hmm.
this will maybe get even stronger, hit the coast of North Carolina, and stop, basically. So they think that once it hits Wilmington, which is in sort of the south coast of North Carolina, it's just going to sit there and churn about and cause havoc. And really, the worst thing is it's probably going to cause a lot of flooding.
Right.
Tons of rain.
You wanted to bring this up because this is sort of a seemingly more regular occurrence
these days. That's what I thought. And that's sort of a good question. And there has been some work done on this. And so I looked, and I don't know a lot about hurricanes, so I looked into this. And did anyone know? So there's hurricanes, cyclones, typhoons.
Mm. Yeah,
there is a difference.
No, I think there is a range.
It's like whether it's warm water, warm, cold water, the warm air or cold air or something, like there's a correlation between these, and it's like different correlations.
I think that always warm water. It's always got to do with water. It's always warm. So the general name is a tropical cyclone.
Mm.
Okay, mm-hmm. So a hurricane is a type of tropical cyclone, and the only real difference is where they occur.
Okay.
So it's just a sort
also
of
typhoon is like Asia, and then like hurricanes is like
right,
the Caribbean.
Exactly. So hurricanes are Atlantic's sort of west coast, east coast of North America, and sort of the West Indies, Caribbean, and then a little bit over on the Pacific coast of North America, sometimes over to Hawaii. They're all called hurricanes.
Okay.
Typhoons tend to be around the Philippines, up to China, sort of East Asia. And cyclones, they tend to be called cyclones, are what you get in the southern hemisphere, mostly sort of around Australia or in the Indian Ocean.
Why do they name them different in different areas?
Confusing, but
is it because the climate is different though? Or?
No, they're all in the tropics.
Okay.
Yeah, so they're all a few tens of degrees north or south of the equator,
right.
where there's warm water. But there is a difference between northern and southern hurricanes or cyclones, I guess, because one of them, the northern ones rotate anti-clockwise. I have to draw it in my head. But, and the southern ones rotate clockwise.
Okay.
And that's because the Earth is spinning. And
the current's just...
Right, and the air is moving fastest at the equator.
Okay.
All right, and so if you imagine sort of it moving at the equator, going up, the Earth is spinning in one particular direction, so it's going to push the northern hemisphere ones round in one direction and the southern in the other direction.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes more sense.
But anyway, looking a bit more about hurricanes, there's a lot of work done, obviously, on hurricanes and where they come from, and the hurricanes that are most commonly hitting the United States, they actually arise in East Africa, Northeast Africa. So you're talking about Ethiopia, that sort of part of Africa. And they form these sort of little tropical disturbances that move west steadily across Africa, and then they hit the ocean, create storms, which then develop into hurricanes.
So would it be, while it's going across Africa, would it be like strong winds and that kind of stuff? Like
I don't think it's storms? My impression is it's not a lot when it goes across Africa.
Okay.
It's sort of an atmospheric, they call them atmospheric waves or something like that, or atmospheric ripples, or easterly waves, I think they're called. And they hit the warm water of the Atlantic Ocean at this time of year, and they sort of pick up all that energy from the warm water, and then they start forming storms, which then start spinning and then get bigger and bigger and bigger. Mm. But your question was, are they getting worse? Yeah, and so there is some evidence that. There will be the sort of models predicting a sort of a 40% to 80% increase in the frequency of really strong storms.
Which is quite a lot.
Yeah. An increase in the frequency of the big storms, but there could be a possible decrease in the frequency of the storms overall.
Okay, so you get fewer, but just when they occur,
really strong
they're
ones.
Really big.
Yeah.
Is it because of warmer water? Or?
Yeah, it's warm water. And also because the sea levels are possibly or definitely rising, then the damage caused by these storms is going to intensify. So storm surges and things like that are just going to get stronger and stronger.
One might say,
yeah,
in te reo Māori. Tāwhiri Mātea too, everybody, just putting this out there. He's a person or the god that's in charge of storms and that sort of thing in te reo Māori. So someone might want to have a chat with him maybe, see what's going on.
See what we can do.
See what we can do. But also, I think that we need to also think about the fact that, we are doing some damage, pretty serious damage to the planet. And this is a reaction to that. We have run out of time. Kua pō katoa te wā, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
We can talk about the plastics next week because that's going to be an ongoing project.
For many, many years.
Thank you very much, Marcus. Thank you, Lisa.
You're welcome.
No worries.
Whakarongo tonu mai, we'll be back after this.
That was Dear Science.